On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Flight delays are at record levels, nearly double from last year. Anger and anxiety soar sky high. Passengers wait for hours, even overnight, for the next open seat. Runways are parking lots. All this as we pay for peanuts. This hour On Point, summer of discontent, air travel in America. Joining me now from New York City is Alexandra Marks. She covers the transportation industry for the Christian Science Monitor. Alex, welcome.
Hi, Jane.
So put this into perspective for us. How bad is it out there, up there?
It's rivaling, if not worse, than the summer of 2000, which to date has been the worst summer travel season in terms of delays. Part of the problem is we have an antiquated air traffic control system.
Mm-hmm.
Really congested skies, because to save money, the big airlines have started using smaller regional jets, so there are more planes in the air. We have very severe weather patterns, summer thunderstorms, and we have planes that are flying at record capacity. I mean, they're full, so that they're not the kind of seats available. So if you get bumped from one flight or delayed, oftentimes, there's not another seat for you to get on. So overall, you have the perfect storm.
I was going to say,
sky.
A perfect storm. So there's not one entity or outlet that's responsible for all this.
No, it's a combination of a lot of factors, and everybody can point their fingers. You know, a lot of the airlines point their fingers at the FAA and the whole air traffic control system, which is it truly needs to be upgraded. We're dealing with 1950s radar technology.
Mm-hmm.
There's also fewer air traffic controllers in the seats. There's, I think, about 14,000. That's 1,000 less than in 2000. And there's more planes in the skies.
So is it just a matter of money for updating the air traffic control system? You say it's so antiquated.
Well, it's a matter of money and technology and bureaucratic and political will. There's the question about how to pay for it. It's about a $22 to $25 billion sort of massive overhaul and upgrade. They want to shift to basically using global positioning systems, but it's taken the FAA years and years and years to develop a system that can handle sort of all the complexities of the air traffic control system.
So you say these problems that we have today actually first appeared before 9/11 in the summer of 2000, I think you said.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it's taken this long to start to see the kinks in the system?
Well, the airline industry prior to 9/11 sort of had two tiers. There was they're the major network carriers, and they're called hub and spoke systems.
Mm-hmm.
They have a hub and spoke system where they have planes feeding into a hub, and then you can, you know, like a plane will come in from New York and it'll drop off 20 people and 5 will go to Detroit and 6 will go off to South Carolina. And so this way that they charged a premium for this service, but it also allowed them to get more people to different places. During this time, the small low-cost carriers sort of started up the Southwest, the JetBlue, and they just flew point to point, which was much cheaper. You know, they take an airplane, they start in Dallas, they land in New York, people get off the plane, people get on the plane, and then they turn the plane around and send it back to Dallas. So it's a much cheaper system. And the low-cost carriers grew significantly and began to challenge the major carriers in terms of pricing. So the major carriers had to bring their airfares down in order to compete. This goes on and on. It's a whole series of factors. But then we had the recession.
Mm-hmm.
The network carriers had a very unusual pricing system where they subsidized leisure travel with business travel fares. So when the recession came, fewer business travelers were flying. They had to lower their fares to compete with the low-cost carriers. Then we had 9/11, which, you know, there was a huge contraction and the number of people flying dropped dramatically. So then the industry went through this major sort of the majors went through a major cost-cutting, painful, you know, pilots taking 40-50% pay cuts, losing their pensions. There were like a dozen bankruptcies. Four of the major airlines went bankrupt. So there was this huge contraction.
Isn't it also that people are just flying more? I mean, certainly more people are flying now than they were 10 years ago, even
certainly
20 years ago.
And you know, I think they're saying, 750 million passengers now by 2015, a billion in the sky. Mm-hmm, so we've got more people flying in a way because the airfares are so cheap, it's gotten to be like hopping on a bus, you know. So we've got more people flying. And the airlines are now rebounding, so they're back in the air. And this air traffic control system, which probably should have been upgraded in the 60s or the 70s or the 80s, to say nothing of the 90s, still is operated with very, you know, radar. Well, guys sitting around looking at radar. And so there's a whole combination of factors. But the reason and then you've got weather. Because the system is so congested and it's, you know, sort of at its tipping point, whenever there's a thunderstorm or a line of thunderstorms, it can create delays across the entire United States.
And I was reading this morning, all this passenger misery, weather notwithstanding, comes at a time when airlines have reported profits for the fourth straight quarter, thin as they may be, but still profits. So obviously that money is not getting poured back into the system to make this any better.
Well, the airlines would disagree with that. The airlines... And again, this is a great point of contention. One of the other things that makes flying so miserable these days, particularly on the major network carriers, is there are a lot of really disgruntled employees. As I mentioned earlier, the employees gave up huge salary. They took huge salary cuts, gave up benefits, agreed to work longer hours for less. They made all these sacrifices. And then when the major airlines started making money, and we'll mention, I think it's United, Glenn Tilton, when they finally started making a profit again, the CEO walked off with, I think it was a $30 or $40 million bonus. And whereas these pilots and the flight attendants and the ground control workers, they're all still working for significantly less. And there's a real sense of frustration. Like, we went the extra mile, and now, you know, management's walking away with millions, and we're still, you know, making less than we did.
So it's not just unhappy passengers. It's unhappy employees, too, on many levels.
Yeah.
Let me bring in another voice to the conversation. Joining me from Lexington, Massachusetts, is John Hassman. He is professor of aeronautics and astronautics and director of the International Center for Air Transportation at MIT. He's also an experienced pilot. Nice to have you with us, Professor.
Good to be here.
How stressed is the system?
As Alexander said, the system is as stressed as it's ever been. In the last month, we had the worst record in delays that we've ever had. In part because the traffic is up, and the system is somewhat more vulnerable in the summer when we do have thunderstorms.
So what are the key choke points, as they're called, in the system, and what sort of ripple effect do those have?
So if you look at the U.S. system, fundamentally we're constrained at the airports. So key airports in the system, particularly in New York and Chicago and other places, get overloaded. And when you look at the routes into and out of, for example, New York, because of the multiple airports you have, you actually have to make sure that the routes in and out are separated. So when a thunderstorm comes through that area, it can block a route into or out of an airport like LaGuardia. Because LaGuardia is scheduled at maximum capacity the entire day, as soon as one airplane gets delayed in the morning, every other airplane for the rest of the day will be delayed.
And what about capacity on these flights? Airport capacity, another problem. Airlines are scheduling more flights to increase the choice for their customers, and it's having an impact as well.
Yeah, so, in fact, the airlines have done a little bit better job in scheduling the airports. Back in 2000, we used to have very sharply spiked schedules, so you'd have a big bank of airplanes going into Chicago or Atlanta, in fact, over the capacity of the airport. What we've done is actually moderated the schedules a little bit, spread out the banks. So it's not quite as bad in terms of the peak behavior. But the problem from an airport capacity standpoint is, given a certain number of runways, there's only a limited number of flights you can get into those runways in any 1 hour. About 60 flights an hour is the max you can get.
And in the United States, unlike Europe, airlines can schedule as many flights as they want. And I guess there's just not the runway space.
Well, yeah. In the U.S., with the exception of a few airports, we allow the market to decide, you know, basically how to schedule the airports. So really, we have a system where the airlines will schedule up to the maximum tolerable delays in the system.
Mm-hmm.
This actually works reasonably well if you do have a hub airport, because a single airline won't overschedule themselves.
So is that something that needs to be regulated?
Well, the problem, if you look at the European system where they do actually limit the slots into the airports, they actually have less service into their airports because mm-hmm. they will only schedule at a lower level of performance.
Mm. We're talking about the sky-high tension growing this summer as more flights are delayed than ever before. Joining me now from Washington, D.C. is Alan Boswell, who has worked as a flight attendant with U.S. Airways for the past 18 years. Alan, good to have you.
Hi, Jane.
How would you describe this summer in the skies?
It's almost, compared to so many summers before, a summer from hell in terms of the bad weather, the delays that have been going on and on and on, especially along the East Coast.
Mm-hmm. How full have your planes been? I mean, talk to us about the load factors, as you call them in the industry.
The load factors are completely through the roof. I can't remember the last time I worked a flight that was not full,
mm-hmm.
Whether it be along, you know, the Northeast Corridor on the shuttle or, out to the West Coast. Everything is completely full.
And how does that complicate your job and flying generally?
Well, most of the airlines are down to what we call minimum staffing, which is the fewest number of flight attendants that they have to put on the aircraft, which means that we are spread very thin, and especially mm-hmm. during the boarding process, which is probably the most stressful, you know, record amount of bags and people and families not sitting together. It's a very, very stressful time.
Have you noticed a change in the demeanor of travelers, Alan, over the last few years?
Well, there was obviously a change, right after September 11th with everything that went on. But a lot of us knew that that basically had a half-life, and all it takes is having to check somebody's bag or them having a double seat assignment. And there has been a really substantial change over the last, I would say, better part of a year.
Mm-hmm. So, what's the worst-case scenario from your perspective as a flight attendant?
The worst-case scenario is just, having a flight before you cancel that you did not know about. And then those passengers are coming on, if they were able to get on that flight, I'm upset that they're delayed or they may not be traveling together or they have been mm-hmm. sitting around all day long. And you have no idea. You're walking into a lion's den.
Mm-hmm. We talked a lot about the complicated system of runways and busy runways. Sitting on the tarmac for hours, I presume, is one of not the most pleasant things for you as a flight attendant either.
That's an example where the passengers and the flight attendants are completely in it together. That we get absolutely no information until we get out there and sit. And a lot of times the pilots don't get information until the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
The antiquated system of air traffic control in this country is appalling. That I think that my iPod could run the entire U.S. air traffic control system.
Can you spot an inexperienced traveler a mile away, Alan? Different needs, different complaints?
It completely has to do with the amount and type of carry-on baggage. I can walk through the terminal and eyeball it from 50 paces.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it also has to do with where you're going. If you're going to Orlando, the odds are pretty good that, you know, that's going to be a little bit more inexperienced. If you're doing D.C. to New York, that's usually, you know, your politicians and your very well-traveled, mm-hmm. you know, our most frequent flyers.
Although your worst route, I hear, is the Northeast Corridor.
It's the one that is, I think, littered with delays, but it's on the flip side of that, it is the travelers that travel all the time. And it's almost, you know, if you're traveling in the afternoon between D.C. to Boston or New York,
mm-hmm.
they have a mentality that we're going to be delayed, as opposed to getting upset about it.
Mm-hmm. They just know it's going to happen. Let's go to the phones, listen to some travelers, their own experiences. John is in Buffalo, New York. Hi, John.
Hello, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've had quite a few incidents this year. I'll name a couple, and then I do have a question. The first incident just recently was flying from Miami to Toronto. We were held on the plane for 2 hours because one of the passengers didn't show up for the flight, and the captain told us that they had to find the bag of that passenger because that was put on the flight. I put on the plane supposedly, and then 2 hours later they discovered it was not on the plane. So there we had been delayed for 2 hours. About 7-8 months ago, I was flying from Miami to somewhere else, and there was a security breach. Somebody had escorted an older couple onto the plane and somehow bypassed one of the security points, and then the escort, the son, presumably, left, and therefore they couldn't get a hold of him to check his security. Meanwhile, again, we were on the plane for 2 to 3 hours.
Delays. Yeah.
At 9 p.m., so that's when the flight was supposed to take off through Charlotte back to Buffalo. So needless to say, everybody was going to miss their connection. And it turned out that this was the airline's error. And the only reason I found that out is because I am an experienced traveler and I know to probe, and I wanted a free hotel. I didn't want to pay for the hotel if it was the airline's fault. I did discover it was the airline that let the person through, but I was the only one. I think there were only one or two of us on that flight that the airline paid for hotels.
What's your question today?
And lastly, yes, the question, I was had a ticket around Thanksgiving time to fly again to Florida, and I decided to try to go early standby. And they put me on the flight. They said I could go standby after waiting several hours at the airport. They obviously had space, but then they said they had to charge me $100 to do so.
So lots of extra fees. How do you get around that? Okay.
Yes. And then,
all right, John, thank you. Let's turn it to the panel. Alex, any thoughts about that?
The airlines reserve the right. You sign a contract when you buy an airplane ticket, and they have the right to charge you if you change. It's part of the contract that you sign. It used to be when you went standby, the airlines were very sort of relaxed about it. It was no big deal. You know, you paid your ticket. You know, it allowed them to put somebody else on your flight. But because they went through such a terrible economic sort of downturn, that they, you know, as you said earlier, you're paying for peanuts. Any which way they can find to make a dime, they'll do it, or a dollar.
John Hansman, more fees, not a lot of flexibility. How much of this problem of air travel these days is the airline's fault?
I think that the airlines are doing the best with what they can. I think that, you know, basically the public has said that they want low fees. And in the long run, this is a consequence of deregulation that started in 1978. And so, you know, if the public gets to a point where they're willing to pay for better service, they'll do it. But at this point, people aren't really interested in, they want to go for the lowest fare. The other thing I'd just point out in John's experience was that we're seeing security issues as another cause of delay. So it's not just weather, it is the breach of the electrical system. We actually had an event this spring where a power failure at LaGuardia caused the airport to shut down, not because the airplanes couldn't fly, but because they couldn't screen the passengers.
Interesting. Back to the phones. Andrew is in Plattsburgh, New York. Hi, Andrew. You're on the line.
Hi. Wonderful to speak to you, Jane.
Thank you.
I've flown quite a bit this summer. I was ill last year. I said, that's it. I got to take some trips and see the rest of the country, especially the country of California. I love to visit so much. I flew Northwest, JetBlue, Continental.
And how was your experience?
Actually, it was perfect. It was wonderful until 2 days ago. And my father used to always say, don't believe the press. They're just trying to sell something to you. And 99% of the people get there on time, no problems, their bags get delivered on time, the plane takes off on time, and that was my experience up until I was flying out of Burlington, because here in Plattsburgh we have a brand new airport with no carriers, so I still have to go across the lake to Vermont. I got to Seattle, and I had a wedding in Victoria, British Columbia, and my $1,000 suit to impress my mom didn't show up until an hour before I was about to leave. And heavens bless Continental, they tried whatever they could try, but they couldn't figure it out. The luggage showed up an hour before I was going to leave. I put it on my flight to leave, and I haven't seen it since.
You haven't? You still haven't? Don't have it back?
I don't have it back. The box that they made me repackage some of my luggage in showed up the next day. I know it's worst case scenario, but 99% of the people on the baggage cart to the baggage area got their bags, except me. So, they lost it, but I found that Continental was much more organized. Continental knew exactly, because I had to switch carriers as part of the ticket that I bought.
Mm-hmm.
And Continental had it all figured out. The bag's supposed to be at my house by now, I suppose. But Northwest, they just don't have the right system. And, I heard you at the beginning saying that, you know, the airline's delays, terrible things. I was flying fancy-free, up in the air, having a great time. And, yeah, your luggage doesn't get there. My suit didn't make it to the wedding. And you might miss your connection. That wasn't my case because we were delayed on the last leg of our flight because of a mechanical problem with the airplane. Something else I noticed that I should have seen in more airports, they had security fellows with security dogs in Cleveland every 15 minutes at night. This was at night, 9, 10 o'clock at night. They had dogs doing sweeps, sniffing everything. And I did notice the four guys in 1 hour that passed by all were very well trained. Had the dogs sniffing the top of the counters, around garbage cans, people's luggage. So it's something I hadn't seen in any other airport. And I flew out of JFK, Vermont, Burlington, Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles. Didn't see it till the last airline at night when the dogs were doing their sweeps. I think they should have that during the day. You can't fool a dog. You can't fast-talk a dog. You can't bribe them with a T-bone. Because it's more than 7 inches. They won't get one past security. But anything longer than 7 inches is a solid item.
Hey, Andrew, I appreciate your story. Thank you so much. Let's go back to Melanie in Middleton, Massachusetts. Hi, Melanie. You're on the line.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
The point that I'd like to make is I travel a lot for work. I also travel for vacation. And I think part of the problem is the airlines just aren't honest with us when there are delays. You know, one time I was flying through San Juan, and our flight was canceled. They routed us to Miami. They told us, oh, don't worry, you'll get out on an early flight in the morning. You can go standby. We got there. We hadn't even been kind of, we hadn't even been checked in. They said that we would have been checked in. And then we didn't get out till 6. And we literally went from gate to gate 8 times trying to get to Boston. And, you know, some gate agents would say, oh, you know, don't come back. There aren't any flights until Wednesday. This was that horrible storm in March where people got delayed. And this was a Saturday. And they said, oh, don't come back until Wednesday. And then another gate agent said she looked ahead and saw that there was going to be some misconnections. And we did get out at 6 p.m. But if they have enough customer service agents, which they don't, and a lot of times customer service is outside security. Mm-hmm. So if you're trying to, you know, juggle your flights, then you're signing yourself up to stand in that line.
But you're looking for honesty, Melanie. Thanks so much for your call. Alan Boswell, flight attendant with U.S. Airways for 18 years. What's your sense about that? Does there need to be sort of a more forthrightness, a more honesty among the airlines for their passengers?
Really what I can say is that, you know, when I'm working a flight and we have a delay, you know, whether it's at the gate or, you know, once we're taxiing out, is that, you know, I talk to the pilots, and I'm like, just tell them what we know. And a lot of times, we don't get the information in a very timely fashion from air traffic control, which is primarily, you know, what I have to deal with is air traffic control delays. If they would just say, you know, we don't have a slot for you for the next 2 hours, that would be fine. Mm-hmm. But it's almost this every 15 minutes calling back up to find out that you're delayed and delayed and delayed. And it just gets back to, once again, a very antiquated system that cannot handle the number of airplanes that are in the air right now on a bad day.
So given air travel as it stands now, is this something that you want to continue doing, Alan, or are you looking for a new occupation?
No, I you know, as many problems as there are, I love this job. I love the people I work with. I love the flexibility, and you know, I meet some of the most powerful, creative people in the world, and it's just a great job. It's a great, great job still, given everything that we've been through in the last, 5 or 6 years.
Well, hey, Alan, I appreciate your time. Alan Boswell, flight attendant with U.S. Airways. Been there for 18 years. Well, good luck. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
Back to the phones. Jamie is calling from Watertown, Massachusetts. Hi, Jamie. You're on the line.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
Hi. It was the last Thursday in June. We were taking our daughters, ages 10 and 8 over to England and France, a week in each place. And needless to say, they were just thrilled. We got on the plane, and the girls were all abuzz with excitement. And the pilot got on and said, due to thunderstorms, we would be about 15, 20 minutes delayed. 3.5 hours later, the plane finally took off with no communication. But during that time, the flight attendants, after 2.5 hours, they finally opened up the plane. And one person from United said, you know, you can step off the plane, and yet another person from United said, if you get off the plane, you can't get back on.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an absolutely complete loss of communication. When we finally got down to Dulles, we had missed our connection over to Heathrow, and there was a woman there, and I said, you know, can we have our luggage? And she said, oh, no, since you're connecting international, you can't have your luggage. And I said, you know, I've got two little girls here. Well, I'm sorry, it'll be about 3 hours, which would have put it about 3 in the morning. So we said, okay, and we had some friends in D.C., and we made the best of it. Got on the plane the next day, but we had gotten down to Dulles about 3 hours early to talk to one of the supervisors to make sure that we would have our luggage. She guaranteed us, we've red flagged it, it will be there, it will be there. Well, I should have known then. We arrived in Heathrow, and there was no luggage. So we left on Thursday. We finally got our luggage on Sunday at about noon in London. But there was no one really was able to give any definitive answers along the way.
Mm-hmm.
We were told, you'll have your luggage in Heathrow, and yet when we checked in London, they said your luggage hasn't even left Boston yet.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my.
So it was really
A mess. Jamie, thanks so much for your call. Hey, John Hansman, is it time for a passenger's bill of rights? I know JetBlue set the stage for that earlier this year.
Well, you know, that's hard to say. That there was a discussion actually back in 2000. Congress was looking at a passenger bill of rights, and there's discussion again now to about, you know, what could be done and whatever. You know, the system is just sort of vulnerable. You can see you get a misconnection due to thunderstorms and whatever. And the airline would like to get your bags there. It's just, you know, the system is so complex and vulnerable that it's not that easy to track that stuff through the system.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we can have a passenger bill of rights. It would probably make travel more expensive, and it's not clear that it would have gotten those bags there. You know, one of the things we need to think about is what can the passengers do for themselves?
Mm.
And you can see that the experienced travelers, to the extent they can, will carry on because of this problem with bags. And at a minimum, you should be, you know, on a long flight, you should be taking the minimum stuff that you would need with you in case you do get disrupted.
Mm-hmm. We've been speaking with John Hansman. He's a professor of aeronautics and astronautics at MIT. Also with us, Alexandra Marks, who covers aviation for the Christian Science Monitor. Now joining us from New York is Peter Vlitas, Vice President of Pro Travel. Nice to have you with us, Peter.
Yes, hi, Jane.
So when travelers are stuck or need to rebook a flight or get a refund, set expectations for us. What can a travel agency do? What can the airlines do?
Well, when a traveler is stuck, and in most cases, and from your previous guests, it all centers around bad weather.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing the travel agent can do is there's someone, that's the person who should get the first call. If you're at the airport and you've made your connection, you're going to miss your connection. If you call your travel agency or if you call somebody or anyone who you've used, they can quickly assess the situation much faster than waiting online for the person behind the counter. And they can see other alternative flights. Because in the airline industry, if there is bad weather, if there's mechanical, there's something called the Rule 240, where the airlines can endorse your ticket to another airline.
Mm-hmm.
And that will increase your chances of getting to the final destination.
And when you're buying a ticket, the old phrase, you get what you pay for, holds true. Tell us why.
Well, absolutely, because if you buy a discounted ticket, especially over the Internet, you really don't have any resources of anybody to call. Plus, in the airline, the way they've been doing it over the last number of years, because of the scale economics, if you have a very inexpensive ticket and somebody's sitting there in front of you with a more expensive ticket, well, obviously that person has a priority above you.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to get to their final destination a lot quicker than you are because their ticket is more flexible.
Mm-hmm.
And it has more of a value to give it to another airline.
Mm-hmm. Back to the phones for another question from our caller, Richard, who's in Mansfield, Massachusetts. Hi, Richard. You're on the line.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
Nice program.
Thank you.
I wanted to raise the issue of the Aviation Trust Fund.
Mm-hmm.
It was established by Congress a number of years ago, and the way it works is between $8 and $10 per ticket, by law, goes into the Aviation Trust Fund. As of 2003, there was approximately $25 billion in this fund. The fund was incepted in order to build new airfields, new runways, to upgrade the electronic components of the air traffic control system. And nothing has happened.
Hmm.
Typically, Congress plays games with the $25 billion to assist in assessing and balancing the budget. And I think, unfortunately, it's going to take a very horrific incident for this money to be released. Mm.
Richard, thank you for bringing up that point. Alex, do you want to tackle that?
Sure. That's one of the things the trust fund is part of the FAA bill, which is being reauthorized. And there's a debate in Congress right now about how those fees and taxes should be levied. The money is there, but Congress does, you know, shuffle it around in order to make its budget deficit look not quite as bad as it is. But I believe that when the air traffic control situation is so bad that once Congress figures out how they're going to sort of change the whole fee and tax system the debate centers around airfares, we pay on as a percentage of airfares, really. Mm-hmm. And so that the major carriers end up putting sort of most of the money into the trust fund, where small corporate jets just they pay a tax on their fuel, like a fuel charge. And then the major airlines' argument is that the small jets and the corporate jets, you know, the movie stars who fly around, they are put, even though their jets are smaller, they put the same strain on the system. So they want everyone to pay the same sort of fee for use, depending. So mm-hmm. once Congress sorts that out, and they have to by September 30th, that there's going to be a real push now to actually do something now for the air traffic control system.
Thank you. Craig is on the line now outside Boston. Hi, Craig. You're on.
Yes. Hello, Jane.
Hi.
I'm actually a captain for a major airline. I'm headed to work today.
Uh-huh.
To see your radio program. I just wanted to make a quick comment about two things. The first being safety. Rightfully so, there are a lot of deserved complaints about the service that the airlines have been giving to their customers of late. But thank God, the one thing that no one has to complain about is the professionalism of the pilots, flight attendants, and air traffic controllers who are terribly overworked, but yet no one has to say, boy, I wonder if I'll arrive safely, mm-hmm. which is certainly a lot different than saying, boy, will I arrive on time.
Although I have to tell you, Craig, I'm holding in my hand two stories just from the last couple of months of very serious near misses, one in Fort Lauderdale, one in San Francisco, within 10 yards of colliding, another almost as close. So there are reports of them. Maybe we just don't hear about them as often.
Well, you know, when you consider all the people that are moved through the air, and I think with the antiquated air traffic system, it says even more about the professionalism of the pilots and the air traffic controllers that things aren't worse.
Mm-hmm.
When you consider that that air travel is safer than driving your car, I think that has a lot to be said for how both pilots and air traffic controllers are dedicated to their profession and the safety of their customers.
Well, go ahead.
The other comment I wanted to make really quickly is, there are certainly a lot of things people can do to help themselves with making on-time departures. I mean, if I had a nickel for every time I'm standing in the security line and I see women with tons of jewelry on that they know they're going to have to take off, or people that have carry-on bags that are just, they're still carrying cigarette lighters, or they're just not prepared to go through the line quickly, or they show up 10 minutes before departure and they think they're going to get on. I mean, these are little things that they could do so easily to help themselves make this a little bit more of an enjoyable experience.
Pilot Craig, thanks so much for your call. Have a good flight. Appreciate your time. Peter Vlitis, let me turn that question to you. What can people do to sort of help themselves through the system?
Well, the pilot was 100% correct. Your carry-on, the type of shoe you wear, you know you're going to go and the TSA is going to make you take your shoes off. So put a loafer on. Put something that can come on and off quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Stay calm. Look at the board. When it tells you if your flight is leaving at 2 o'clock, go through security. Make sure you're at the gate early. The other thing is, when you're going on vacation or if it's a business trip, everyone wants to plan to the last second. You can't do that in today's environment. You can't expect to make, although the airlines use one-hour connections or an hour 50-minute connections, you can't do that. You should put two-hour connections or three-hour connections.
Mm-hmm.
Give yourself enough time to make the connection. Just last week alone, British Airways increased the connection times by 15 minutes at Heathrow Airport.
Mm-hmm.
People should do that. Plan smart. Just because the airlines post a tight connection doesn't mean you're going to make it. So what I would recommend, what we recommend, is look at the flights, give yourself enough connecting time to get from one gate to the other, and take into consideration if there's bad weather and delays.
Peter Vlatis, thanks. Let's go back to the phones. Edward is calling from West Palm Beach, Florida. Nice to have you, Edward. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call, Jane.
Sure.
It's funny, I'm an airline pilot as well, and this is a central issue for myself and some of your other callers based on the economics of the problem. My feeling is government intervention is not the solution. Government oversight helps, just like it does with the FAA and TSB investigation. But I believe, as your expert guest has mentioned, the economy of scale, I think that is what really plays into this, is customers that complain because of the poor service and the apathetic approach that airlines are taking.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to these types of weather delays. And I think that that is really what's going to drive the correction. For example, the JetBlue incident, where JetBlue took a lot of bad press, they made a lot of internal corrections based on the economics of it.
Do you think it worked for them?
Well, you know, obviously we do have a systemic problem with the system.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to take the infrastructure of the system is obviously going to take a major influx of resources to overhaul for the long term. But if you look back at the 78 deregulation and you look at today, I think what happened was you have such a gross aggregate of increase in operations that based on that alone, if you were to re-regulate issues, you could probably suppress that and change the economics of it to make it less feasible for people to travel easily. Just let the economics work.
Okay.
If people are not happy with the service, complain, get on radio programs like yours, and let the economics of it force the internal policies of the companies to make the corrections.
Edward, I appreciate your comments, and to you, Pilot Edward, have a good flight. Appreciate your time. Thanks. Richard is calling now from Greenville, New Hampshire. Hi, Richard. You're on the line.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for having me on.
Sure.
My story is about... are you still there?
Yes, go ahead. We're listening.
Oh, okay. Okay. My story is about taking a group of students on a Habitat for Humanity trip this past spring and getting
mm-hmm.
caught in that late March snowstorm.
Mm-hmm.
We were flying from Atlanta to Newark. And, of course, we had heard lots of stories about being stuck in Newark. But this actually, the point of the story is my co-leader and myself, we had to sort of go into problem-solving mode. We had 13 students and ourselves. And we found that we saw lots of angry, irritated people.
Mm-hmm.
But we found that by maintaining sort of a polite manner, even though we were still pretty assertive, we ended up dealing with customer service people who were actually, you know, went out of their way to try to help us. And we actually ended up with the terminal manager who helped us put up a whole group of kids at night when we were told there were no rooms within 20 miles of Newark. So we had rooms for the night, food, and food for the next morning, and still no way home. But then I met with the manager again, and we got Amtrak tickets to get us all back to... close to our destination in Boston.
You have the touch. Yeah. Well, Richard, thanks for your story. It's not all bad, I guess. Peter Vlatis, don't take it out on the airline employees. Bottom line from Richard's call.
That is correct. And you need to stay calm because that airport, that airline employee is there to help you. And they're looking at a screen. And in their screen, all they see is zeros, which means there are no available seats on those planes. and there's hundreds of people in their face. And they get aggravated.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to help somebody who wants to be helped. And if you stay calm, you'll get service a lot quicker.
Please. Peter Vlitas joining us from New York, Vice President of Pro Travel, a Manhattan-based travel agency. Thanks for so much for your time, Peter. I appreciate
Thank you, Jen.
It. Thanks. Back to the phones for a couple more calls before we round out here. Rudy is calling from Potsdam, New York. Hi, Rudy. You're on the line.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have noticed the past several times that I've checked baggage that if I get there on time, 2 hours early, my luggage fails to arrive with me. And this has gotten me thinking a little bit about the system and how all the pieces work together or don't work together.
Mm-hmm. Let's turn it to John Hansman, wrapping up here. Rudy, thanks for your call. Systemic problem with baggage?
Well, baggage is a headache for the airlines because you have a very complicated system and whatever. I'm not sure exactly about Rudy's experience.
Mm-hmm.
It is true that, you know, when you check in 2 hours early, the bag goes into a holding area waiting for the flight because the airplane isn't there yet.
Mm-hmm.
And generally, the experience is pretty good if the airplane connects on time. Where you tend to get into troubles is when your flight doesn't connect, and then you're on a different flight than expected, so the bag has to be changed and whatever. We also have this rule that says that what we call positive bag match, where the passenger has to be on the airplane with the bag for security reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what causes a lot of cross-checking in the system and can cause some delays.
Go ahead.
But it's a very complicated system.
Mm-hmm.
You got the people, you got the bags, you got the airplanes, you got the crews, you got the maintenance on the airplanes, and you got limits on the airports, and you got the weather, which creates variable problems.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to make that go when you have, you know, 5,000 flights in the air.
So I'm hearing all of these different factors, John, the antiquated air traffic control system, more planes in the air, we've got more people traveling, and weather, frankly. What's the answer to this? It doesn't seem like there is one.
It's a problem that we're going to be stuck with for quite a while. There are solutions, but none of them are good. We want to improve the system, and people talk about the antiquated system. Part of the reason why it's difficult to upgrade the system is it's considered to be a safety-critical system that has to run 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
So when we propose a change or when we want to change something in the system, we can't turn it off for 2 weeks and then turn it back on. So in the levels of both safety and environmental reviews make it very hard to make changes in the system.
Mm-hmm.
We can't add airport capacity in the real places we need it. We'd love to have another airport in New York,
mm-hmm.
you know, but there is no space in New York, and mm-hmm. you can't get through the environmental.
No air routes either. Yeah.
Well, the air routes, I think we can work, and that's in process. But the thing that really sticks us is that we don't have enough runways.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the only real solution there is to go into what we call demand management, where we're just going to limit the flights to what we can run reliably,
mm-hmm.
which means that the prices will go up and not as many people will be able to get to New York or the other desirable locations.
Alex Marks, I'll give you the last word in a minute left here. What's the answer from your perspective?
Oh, it's a very complicated answer. It is upgrading that air traffic control system. It is the airlines now. They've finally gotten their economics in shape now. They need to do a better job of responding to consumer concerns. But as John said, you know, it's like, you know, changing the wheels on a speeding car in terms of upgrading the system. But it's something which has to be done. And it will take several years for it to be done.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that passengers just need a lot of patience. And actually, a wonderful woman I interviewed the other day said, "I finally figured out how to work the system." She said, "You take the first flight out and figure you won't get there till the end of the day." And unfortunately, you know, for the next couple of years.
Sadly, that would be true.
Yeah.
Alexandra Marks, correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor covering airline industry and transportation. Thanks so much, Alex, for your time. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And John Hansman from Lexington, Massachusetts, professor of aeronautics and astronautics at MIT. Appreciate so much your time. Thanks so much, sir.
Anytime.
I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.